Good afternoon. You're in for a treat. Nick Thomas returns. Remember, Nick is a freelance writer whose 140 feature articles have appeared in major publications across the United States, in Canada, and England. He's also Dr. Nick Thomas, professor of physical science and chemistry at Auburn University, Montgomery. Welcome back.
My pleasure. Thank you, Carolyn.
Nick, your accent gives you away. Where are you from?
Well, I was raised in Tasmania. Lived there till I was about 8 years old, then moved over to Melbourne and spent much of my life there before moving over to the US.
And you've been here for a long time.
Yeah, I've been here about 25, 26 years now.
You have Tasmania in common with a famous movie actor.
That's right. Errol Flynn was born in Tasmania, and we lived not too far away in one of the houses that he was raised. And remember, my mother used to always drive by that street, and she would say, "A famous actor lives down that street." She never would tell me what actor it was, and I never found out till much, much later that it was actually Errol Flynn.
One of your latest projects involves interviewing the children of celebrities, and Errol Flynn was one of the actors.
Yeah, last year was a pretty important year in Errol Flynn fan history, because it was the year of the anniversary of his death and also his birth. He was born 100 years ago last year, and he died 50 years ago last year. So I wrote this story for the Washington Post and got to interview his daughter, Rory, and his two grandkids, Sean and Luke, and some of the actors he worked with, like Libby de Havilland and Maureen O'Hara, and some film historians. So it was a very, very timely piece to write about Errol Flynn.
What did you take away from that interview?
Oh, I learned a lot about Errol Flynn. A lot of the stuff that you hear about Flynn was just basically not true. A lot of the rumors that are out there, some of the books that were written back in the 70s and 80s about him, just full of mostly lies and gossip. So he was certainly a rogue, there's no doubt about that, but a lot of the stuff you read about him is just not true.
When I read your article about Errol Flynn, as told to you by Rory, his daughter, found out that his son went missing during the Vietnam War.
Yeah, Sean, who was also the name of his son, was a journalist. He and a cameraman disappeared during the Vietnam War, and just in the last few months there's been talk about they thought they found his remains. I think they've done some DNA testing, and it turned out not to be. I think it's almost impossible to find the remains of someone that died there, you know, 30, 40 years ago. But there was a bit of interest in that for a while, yeah.
And then another fact that came out of that article was that Rory's grandmother was a descendant, supposedly, of midshipman Edward Young of the HMS Bounty.
That's what she says, yeah. And apparently they had a sword that was part of the arsenal on the ship that I think it's been lost now. But there's fascinating history behind the whole family.
So when you interview these celebrities' children, you're finding out nuggets of information that we've never had access to.
Well, yeah, some of them have talked before about their famous parents. Sarah Karloff talked to me about Boris Karloff, and she's done quite a lot of interviews over the years about her famous dad. But one person who I spoke with who her father has never been really written about before was June Lockhart, and her father was Gene Lockhart. And June, of course, was well known for being the mom in Lost in Space and Lassie, but no one has ever written about her dad, Gene Lockhart, before. And he was a very, very well-known character actor, and you may not recognize the name, but everyone will recognize the face in these old movies that he was in.
These generations of folks. Speaking of generations, the Marx Brothers. Now, that was an intriguing article about the Marx Brothers. Tell us more.
Oh, well, that was Bill Marx, who was Harpo's son. And Bill was he's a comedian, a musician, an author, fabulously funny fellow. And just gave me some wonderful stories about his dad. For instance, the harp that Harpo played in all the movies, they were his own harps. And when he died, the family donated them to a music school in Israel, which is where they still are now. So, Bill Marx and the other cousins of his, there's a lot of them around still, and occasionally they talk about their famous dads.
The interesting thing is that Bill, as a composer, did his dad's music arrangements on the harp.
That's right. They worked together in a couple of couple of films, that's right, yeah.
And his Bill, again, a stand-up comedian, again, that funny streak going through the family. But what was intriguing to me about that article was to find out that the Marx Brothers did their own stunts into their mid-50s.
They did. You can see in some of their later films that they are not doing their own stunts because they were just getting a little bit too old, and some of the stunts were pretty difficult to do. But they clowned around, and what you saw on the screen was them actually doing it. That's right.
And how many were there to begin with?
There was five, but only the three really are the ones that are well known.
Yeah, but they all had names ending in zero. Zeppo, Gummo, Groucho, Chico, and Harpo.
Right, right.
And wasn't Bill upset that his dad was finally prevailed upon to speak?
He was. He thought that was kind of a betraying the fans who kind of idolized Harpo for being that mime. And then there's a couple, if you can go on the internet, you can find a couple of sites where they actually have recordings, very short recordings of Harpo speaking. And the family was very, very upset about that. They've got more recordings in their family vaults, but they're not releasing those anytime soon. It's part of Harpo's mystique that he was always silent.
Nick, you profiled one of my favorite actors, and that was Glenn Ford.
Yeah, so underrated, Glenn Ford. He was in hundreds of films and television shows, and his son Peter Ford has got a book coming out later this year, I think, about Glenn Ford, and a lot of surprises because there's never been a biography about Glenn Ford. Most people think of Glenn Ford, I think, as like a Jimmy Stewart kind of character, but Peter, his son, said he was more like an Errol Flynn. He had a lot of romances. 100 or so, and just not the sort of person you probably expecting when you read a book about.
And he kept a diary.
He kept a diary every day of his life, and Peter said that he could go back to 1934 and tell you what his dad had for breakfast. It was so detailed. He never threw anything away.
Nick, I didn't realize he was Canadian.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Came from Canada in 1922, lived a long life.
Right, yeah, yeah. And he was best actor of the year back in the mid-1950s. I mean, he was just one of those underrated actors.
One of the surprising things that came out of your article about Glenn Ford was to find out that he was a very talented man with a gun. He was the fastest draw in Hollywood at the time.
That's right. He and Peter used to practice in the bedroom, and they draw down on each other, and he had this reputation. He was actually, as you say, the fastest actor who could draw a gun.
Who was his lost love?
Oh, that would have to have been Rita Hayworth. He worked with her in Gilda. That was the famous film that two of them were in. And he just pined over her for years and years and years. So, that was his lost love for sure.
Now, it's not simply celebrities that you're interviewing. How about astronaut Jim Lovell?
Well, Jim Lovell's son, Jay, is a chef, and we were up in Chicago a year or so back, and we tracked down Jay Lovell, who owns a restaurant up there called Lovell's of Lake Forest, and he's a fabulous cook, fabulous chef, and told me some great stories about his dad and about how he got into cooking. So, yeah, that was another son of a fairly well-known individual.
Did Jim Lovell expect his son to follow in his footsteps?
He did. He wanted him to go into the military. In fact, I think Jay was in an academy somewhere, but his passion was always cooking, and that's where he ended up.
What article are you working on now?
Actually, right now I'm doing an interview with the children of Mo Howard, who was one of the Three Stooges, and two of his kids are still alive, and track down some actors who worked with the Three Stooges, and so we're going to look at Mo Howard. Now, you think of Mo as this guy who used to beat the crap out of poor Curly and Larry, but in real life, Mo was the gentlest, kindest person you could imagine. Johnny Ginger, who was in one of the films that the boys were in, told me the story of how he had a very, very sore throat one time, and Mo just stopped what he was doing, got in his car, drove to a drugstore, came back, this is in the middle of filming, came back with some throat lozenges and antiseptic spray for his throat and said, you know, you got to take care of your throat. So,
are you a Marx Brothers fan?
Oh, yeah, Marx Brothers, Three Stooges, anything from that era. I love that classic period of of film history.
Now, why have you been spending the last 2 years on Elvis?
Oh, yeah. I write for this magazine in England called Essential Elvis. And because I like old movies, I find the old Elvis movies pretty fascinating. Now, the stories are pretty lame, I know that, and they're very predictable. Elvis wasn't the greatest actor, but he'd had no acting lessons. He was just thrown into this acting career, and in some of his films he does a pretty good job. I think one of the things that interests me most about the old Elvis films is if you look real closely, you can find actors in there who were not yet well known, but they went on to become really famous. For instance, in Roustabout, there is Raquel Welch. She's got a very small part. Terry Garr, Kent McCord, who went on to be in Adam 12, Richard Kyle, who was he played Jaws in all the James Bond films. You can see him in there. So it's fascinating to watch the old Elvis films.
How do you track them down?
Well, there are various ways of doing that. I tracked down Joan Freeman, who worked in Roustabout with Elvis, through her husband, Bruce Kessler, who was a fairly well-known director of TV in the 70s. And the two of them gave up Hollywood in the 80s and 90s, got themselves a boat, and they sail around the world. So when I actually talked to Joan, she was out in the Atlantic Ocean traveling up to Maine, and she's got this computer and phone on a boat, and it was kind of cool to talk to her out there in the middle of the ocean.
I bet it's flattering when they hear from you to realize that there are people interested.
Some of them feel that way, indeed. Others kind of want to get away from that Hollywood past, and they don't really want to talk about it. But if you can find someone that wants to, it's always fascinating. Yeah.
Who sticks with you out of all these 140 interviews? Who has made a huge impression on you?
Oh gosh, that's probably hard to answer. I really think the kids that I've talked to, the children that I've talked to of some of these well-known actors, Hedy Lamarr's daughter, for instance, was just fascinating to talk to about Hedy Lamarr. And again, a lot of rumors about her and her life. Supposedly she met with Adolf Hitler and things like that, but she said none of that was true about her mother.
So it's good to put the rumors to rest.
It is, that's right, yeah.
Now, you have a blog that is very entertaining.
Well, it's a little different to the feature stories that I write. It's meant to be a little more humorous, and yeah.
Yeah, the latest article on your blog is Losing Weight, an American Challenge, and you tell us how Mississippi is number one and, quote, waddling in close behind is Alabama, tying with Tennessee for second place in most obese.
Right, right. It's a serious issue, the obesity problem in the country, and you don't want to make light of it, but there's always a humorous side to everything, and that's kind of what I look at on this blog of mine.
Can you give us the blog address?
Well, I got a website. It's just getnickt.com.
Say that again.
Getnickt.com. And you can find the blog, and a bunch of my stories are on there to read as well.
Yeah, and back to the losing weight article in American Challenge, the antidote appears to be the poultry beast.
Oh, Turducken. Yes. That's a delightful concoction where you take a turkey and stuff it with, what is it now, a duck, and you stuff that with a chicken, and you stuff that with sausage, and if that thing doesn't kill you, nothing will.
Nick, what else do you want your listeners to know about your writing activities?
Well, I think a lot of people love to write, and they're perhaps a little bit uncertain about whether they're good enough to write and have something published, and I think if you have that passion, you should give it a shot, because I was not trained to write. It's just something that I've kind of picked up on my own, you know. And with the internet and all the websites out there, if you really have a passion to write a story or do a blog or something like that, then just, you know, go for it, and you'll be surprised that you might have some success.
Thanks for being our guest
today.
My
pleasure.
Nick Thomas has been our guest, freelance writer, and his blog, one more time, is getnickt.com. We'll take you back to Troy for the remainder of your news hour. Our program is a public service of Troy University.